Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. The first case for this morning is Michael Reese Hospital versus Tommy Thompson. Mr. Klein.
Morning, Your Honors. I'm Arthur Klein, and I am arguing on behalf of the plaintiffs, or the plaintiff. As Your Honors are aware, this is essentially a suit involving a claim for return of monies paid by a Medicare provider hospital. The primary issue, I think, before Your Honors is whether the district court correctly dismissed the case for want of jurisdiction. And I think the principal question in that regard is whether the hospital has exhausted its administrative remedies, for short, under the Illinois Council Doctrine. We obviously disagree with the district court ruling. And I think, to start, I would like to point out, at least in our judgment, that the district court appeared to be under a misconception as to two significant elements here. First, I think Judge Zagel viewed what he was dealing with as a mere settlement agreement. And I think quite clearly what we had here was more than a mere settlement agreement. What we had and what we were dealing with was a final intermediary determination which had the same force and effect as a board decision. Second, I think Judge Zagel, again, unfortunately, did not grasp, and perhaps it was the lawyer's fault, the distinction or the double-trained appellate process or appeal process under the Medicare review system. And I think I have to go back just a little bit for a little bit of background, if I may. What we're dealing with here is a system of reimbursement which was put in place in 1990 under the 1989 rule and the so-called COBRA 85. This was an entirely new system of reimbursement, and what it did was predicate provider reimbursement on what was called a base year. The base year, in this case 1985, was to be calculated by the intermediary, in this case HCSC, which was Michael Reese's intermediary. That was a cost calculation in which the average per resident cost was fixed for the base year, for 1985. After that, every year following the base year, in this particular case 1986 to 1990, was not recalculated. But there was an automatic adjustment predicated only on the base year, adjusted only for two factors, two technical factors. Number one was the inflation rate, which is called the CPUI, and the number of residents in each of those following years.
Counsel, if you didn't talk much about it, neither side did in this. Are we talking about 3.5 million? Is that what the?
No, we're talking about actually they repaid 3.5 million, okay. And the amount that they are seeking, and I'm not quite sure how you calculate it, is the Medicare share, which is about $1.5 million plus interest. That's what they're seeking to have returned. Oh,
the bottom line in this case, $1.5 million plus interest is
yes,
what they're seeking.
Correct.
Thank you.
I'm going to stop you here, please, because it seems to me that as a result of the settlement meeting, HCSC issued a revised base year
yes,
resident amount, which, it from what you're saying, resolved your base year appeal.
It resolved the base year appeal,
right.
And they chose not to. They had another shot at appealing that 180 days after that was issued, and they didn't.
No. Did HCSC ever issue revised NPRs for FY 1986 through 1990? Which would address your 1986 through 1990 appeals? I mean, and that's a yes or no.
I can only answer it this way. What they did do was they attached to that letter that you're talking about a chart which showed the revisions for 1986 through 1990. What Michael Reese is seeking is the enforcement of that, and I guess to answer your question, they did not enforce. The base here is the predicate.
Now, what we have to know is, did they ever issue revised MPRs?
Not formally.
We have to know that.
Not formally.
Okay. If not, why would Michael Reese have allowed the PRRB to dismiss those appeals? Because even if the law required the HCSC to revise those MPRs, wouldn't the proper place to enforce the law have been through that appeal rather than through us?
In our judgment, no. And here's why. There are at least two reasons. First of all, the rules are very clear. The rule is very clear that the 1986 through 1990 appeals could have only dealt with two issues. And this is, for example, at our appendix, the main appendix, pages 16 and 37, show these rules. The only two things those 1986 through 1990 appeals could have dealt with were the issues of the number of residents per year and whether the CPIU was properly calculated for those years. Second of all, the PRRB does not have the power to enforce. All they can do is affirm, modify, or reverse a judgment. So this is, I think, where the district court also got confused. Those appeals, in substance, were absolutely irrelevant. They could not have resolved the issues that are before the district court and before this court. What Michael Reese did was, I think, the only thing they could have done, which was seek to reopen, I guess, is the technical word. But what they were really seeking to do was to compel compliance with a duty that was clear under the new rules and the statute.
This may sound very simplistic to you, but it seems to me that the reminder letter from the PRRB stated that if all issues had not been resolved, but the provider had not yet received payment, it should notify the board. Well, I mean, it should notify the board. And the board would permit the appeal to be reinstated at the end of 1 year if the provider had still not been paid. Well, you weren't paid. What am I missing? I mean, wasn't that the proper procedure for you to follow for the 86-90 appeals? Because the base year appeal settlement had presumably resolved the appeals, but you had not yet received payment.
There are several reasons why those letters were properly disregarded. Number one, as I said before,
why would anyone disregard anything from the government?
Well, first of all, I think the letters, if you look at them, deal with a situation where an administrative resolution has resolved the appeal. In the case of the 1986-1990 appeals, that was not right. They were resolved by operation of law once the base year was final. So it really wasn't a resolution by administrative resolution. Second of all, the letters notwithstanding, the board does not have enforcement power. The regulations are very clear about that.
No, but it does have the power to force you to exhaust your administrative remedies.
But
that was not done here.
Well, with all due respect, Your Honor, we think it was because the 1986-90 appeals could not have resolved what we're talking about here. The only way that could have been resolved once the base year was final was, in fact, what was done, which was to ask the secretary to compel enforcement. If the board does not have the power to enforce,
why didn't you write a letter to the government saying you don't have this power, but this is what you know, what ought to be done. Can you point to any case in which the federal courts have entertained a suit to force compliance with the terms of the settlement under circumstances similar to this one?
No, I don't suppose I can, but this is, in a sense, I wouldn't say a new impression. I don't think there's any case that says we can't, because I think this is a far different situation than Illinois Council, for example, where they just attacked the regulations. And again, we did exhaust our full appeals by appealing the 1986 the base year and exhausting that. And the point again is that whatever those letters said, the board does not have the power to do what we asked the secretary to do.
Thank you, Council.
Thank you.
Ms. Jones?
Good morning, Your Honors.
Good morning.
May it please the Court, my name is Miranda Jones, and I represent the Secretary of Health and Human Services, Tommy Thompson, the appellee in this case. If I may, I'd like to start by clarifying exactly why Michael Reese is no longer entitled to have the 1995 revised NAPRA applied to its 86 through 90 cost years.
Before you do that, can you answer one question for me? You've argued in the briefs that Michael Reese should have pursued its 86-90 appeals, but could it have enforced the terms of the base year appeal settlement in the context of its 86-90 appeals?
In a sense, it could have, although not necessarily in the terms of enforcing that settlement. The way that it gets its 86 through 90 cost years addressed, it had to appeal both the base year as provided by the regulation and the application of that base year amount to the 86 to 90 cost year appeals for those appeals to be addressed. Once it resolved the base year issue, Michael Reese claims that the December 94 settlement discussions resolved that issue, and they claim that that means that the settlement would apply to the 86 to 90 cost years. That is not the understanding of the government, but even if it had been true that the intermediary had agreed to apply the base year amount to the 86 to 90 cost years, once Michael Reese found out that that had not happened, according to its understanding of the 94 meeting, it had live appeals before the PRB, which, if in the Blodgett case that Michael Reese has cited, which is a PRB case, that case clearly demonstrates that the PRB was more than capable of taking a revised base year appeal and ordering the intermediary to apply it to subsequent cost years that were on appeal.
Look, there's a lot of doublespeak in this case, and I'm worried about a catch-22. After the base year was settled, HCSC issues its revised notice of, its NAPRA, a notice of per-resident amount. And it included a schedule that reflected the revised base year per-resident amount for the cost reporting periods of 86-90. I'm right so far, right?
That's correct.
Okay. Because that HCSC schedule reflected all of the relief that was sought by the 86-90 appeal, why should we have expected Michael Reese to prolong the administrative process, pay its lawyers, whatever was going on there, by continuing to pursue those appeals? Would a reasonable lawyer looking at this think, no, it's not over?
We believe that a reasonable lawyer, but, and more importantly, a prudent healthcare provider would have known that it had not been paid according to its understanding of an administrative resolution, and knowing that it had live appeals before the PRB, having been informed on May 96 that by a reminder letter from the board that position papers would be due, would have known by that point that it had not had the base year applied, would have known by January 1, 1997, which is more than a year after the revised NAPRA had been issued, that it had not been paid at that time according to its understanding of the agreement, and would have submitted position papers to bring that issue to the board's attention. It would have known by April 1, 97, when final position papers were due, would have known by June 97, which is more than a year and a half after the revised NAPRA had been issued, and when the case was dismissed by the board for failure to comply with board orders, at that point, if it had not been paid, according to the reminder letters, it should have raised that issue to the board's attention, asked for reinstatement of its case so that the board could address that issue of the application.
You say reminder letters.
Yes.
How many were there in toto?
I am aware of the May 1996 letter for each of the cost year appeals that were still before the board.
Right. There was one letter. Was there not?
Correct. Setting two due dates for January 97 and April 97 for position papers in those cases.
Are there any administrative remedies available to Michael Reese currently to enforce the original settlement?
We do not believe so, because Michael Reese let the administrative remedies that were available to it lapse. It did not pursue its appeals before the board and did not even ask for reinstatement of its appeal once it was dismissed.
Do you see anything unfair here? Do you see anything? You know, the government doesn't always pay its bills on time, right? You don't have to respond. And so hospitals are kind of used to, I would imagine, thinking, oh, you know, it's coming. It may come late, but it's coming. There's nothing they can do now.
Because they let their appeals lapse, and over an extended period of time, I would point out, over at least a two-year period of time, if not more, and because they never requested reinstatement of the appeals or requested reopening within the time frame, the three-year time frame allowed for reopening requests, we would submit that they have no further recourse. They had recourse, however. They had remedies available to them, and they chose not to pursue those remedies. As your honors know, in a large and complex regulatory system like Medicare, a system such as the administrative appeals process is set up so that individuals can have their issues addressed at an individual level. And because Michael Reese did not do that, did not avail itself of the remedies available to it in this system, it cannot now come back, say, we ignored the PRB's orders and letters, and now we want to go straight to federal court.
So I gather that the government has not paid, and you're in addition seeking, what, $1.5 million from them?
My understanding is that the $1.5 million has not been paid. So I'm not under the impression that there's currently money that we're seeking.
Well, you didn't pay them, and they haven't paid you. You still have an opportunity to pursue your 1.5. You're saying they don't have an opportunity to pursue their...
We're saying that they have not exhausted their administrative remedies that were available.
So you could still go after them for the 1.5.
That's not my understanding, but
I won't ask you to make a concession to the government.
Thank you, Your Honor.
That's all I have.
If there are no other further questions, we'll rest on our briefs.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Klein, how much time? You have 4 minutes, Mr. Klein, on your rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. I will try not to use them all. I don't mean to beat a dead horse. I mean, the answer is, and I think as Judge Rovner said, it is kind of a catch-22. In retrospect, was it should they have ignored the letter? Well, you know, I guess if the court affirms the district court, the answer is yes. But I keep coming back to the same point, and I don't mean to beat a dead horse, but the 1986 to 1990 appeals could not have resolved that letter notwithstanding what we're talking about here. They were limited to the very narrow issues of the number of residents and the correct applications of the CPIU, which was accurately reflected, as Your Honor pointed out, in the revised NAPRA with that chart or the list. The board clearly, it's clear under the federal rules that the Code of Federal Regulations, that the board has no enforcement power. I might add that to the extent that it took a while to write the letters, there was no intermediary. I think it was public knowledge that HCSC was accused of, not accused, but convicted of fraud. And for a while, Michael Reese didn't have an intermediary at all. And what they're seeking is not payment, but return of part of $3.5 million that they were forced to pay, that I think there's probably no question that they're entitled to. The revised NAPRA clearly increased the amount of the of provider reimbursement. I guess the best way I can put it is that they're trapped in a maze. All they could do under the regulations and under the rules was what they did, which was to write the secretary and, in effect, tell the secretary that this had to be rectified, and it did. The revised NAPRA and the Blodgett decision that we cited in both of our briefs, which is a board decision, makes it very, very clear that the tail wags the dogs, that once the base year is determined, it automatically determines the following years. The appeals for the following years were absolutely irrelevant to any issue here. Should they have pursued them nonetheless? I think I have to answer that in the grand scheme of things, the answer should be no. It would be, I think Judge Rovner pointed out, where we would be uselessly prolonging the appeal process, going forward with something that the board has no authority to do, which is enforcement, and something that is totally improper in subject matter under the unequivocal language of the regulations.
But there was no response at all, correct? In other words, you didn't write a letter at the time and say, we would be doing a useless act, so we're not going to respond to you.
They wrote a letter. It was a while. It was about a year and a half after it became final. They wrote the first letter, and that was the time, I know my time has expired.
You have another minute.
Oh, I'm sorry. It's the wrong color. There was no intermediary, and that's why there was a response. Look, could it have, in hindsight, been pursued with more diligence? Sure. But I don't think that's the issue. The question here is whether they have exhausted their internal remedies, not whether they did something that, in hindsight, they might have done a little quicker, but which has no legal, should have absolutely no legal detriment. I think there was a lot of confusion there. I think if Your Honors look at the final, when they finally got a response, the new intermediary said one of the things we had to figure out was who was supposed to respond. And I think that's most telling as well.
Thank you, Mr.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Our thanks to both counsel. The case will be